They're calling resistencia because they trust us. They know that we will get everything out, that the people in the outside will know what's going on inside. ISIS trying to hide everything. They purposely sent a press release about Mr. Daniel's death, and they purposely set aside, they did not mention that he was in segregation. There's so much to hide. There's so many things ICE, NGO, and all these companies don't want the public to know. And that's why we exist, because again, if it's not up to us, we won't be saved by the government.
And Maru, we just have about 30 seconds, but you mentioned the private flight companies. Could you talk about what you've been tracking about flights from Seattle's Boeing Field, King County International Airport?
Since they resumed last year in May, we have been observing flights every week. In the past 3 weeks, we have not been successful to observe almost anything, because now this company that is the one that allowed these flights to come back, Signature FBO, that willingly started a contract with ICE to service their flights, which their contract with the airplane company Global Crossing Airlines, they decided to switch the plane around. We are not able to see anymore. They're blocking our view. Geo buses are blocking our view. They don't want us to see people being handcuffed and being put in the planes.
Maru Pando, we have to leave it there. We want to thank you so much for being with us with the group La Resistencia. That does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Listen to Black Book Talk at KBOO FM every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon. Co-host Obi Hill, Patricia Welch, and Emma Jackson Ford discuss African-American authors and books. That's Black Book Talk every first Thursday from 11:30 till noon on KBOO FM.
You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and we're nearing the end of our All Thrills, No Frills special programming campaign. We only have a few days left to meet our $22,000 goal, and you can do your part by going to kboo.fm/give to make a contribution today. KBOO's special programming is only possible with your support. To listen to all of our thrilling specials from this drive, go to kboo.fm/thrills.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon Governor Tina Kotek walks back a plan to toll I-5 and I-405 through Portland. Portland water and sewer rates are set to increase this year. And in national news, a whistleblower who called out quality and safety issues at Boeing is found dead days before they were scheduled to testify against the company. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. I'm Eric Leuschner. Oregon Governor Tina Kotek wants to call it quits on attempting to toll I-5 and I-405 through Portland, according to a letter sent Monday. Lawmakers started exploring tolls during heavy traffic hours as a way to raise money for infrastructure projects. These projects need funding help since starting in 2025. The money coming from the state gas tax is expected to decline. Kotek says she expects state lawmakers to address that in the 2025 legislative session. Oregon Department of Transportation leaders released statements agreeing with Kotek that the tolling doesn't make sense and that it would put too heavy a burden on low-income Oregonians. This doesn't change the plan to collect tolls on the interstate bridge between Oregon and Washington. Water and sewer rates are set to increase this year. The Portland Water Bureau is proposing a nearly 8% increase in water rates, and the Bureau of Environmental Services, or BES, is requesting a 5.15% increase in sewer rates. Both price hikes together will amount to a 6.24% increase in water and sewage bills. This amounts to an $8.88 increase per month for a typical single-family residential customer. Leaders of the two bureaus proposed their rate hikes to Portland and City Council last Wednesday. They cited rising operational and maintenance costs, including the construction of the Bull Run Water Treatment Plant, as causing the rate increases. Last year saw an 8% rise in water rates, as well as a near 4% rise in sewer and stormwater rates. Rate hikes are more common within the BES and the water bureaus, since they draw funds almost exclusively from rate and fee-paying customers. Other city bureaus draw money from the city's main budget. The BES and water bureaus also fund themselves through system development charges, or SDCs, for construction projects. These are set to increase by 5% this year, in line with rate increases set by the Bureau of Development Services. Speaking with City Council, Portland Water Bureau Directors Gabe Sommer said SDCs still fail to represent the cost of services provided, meaning, quote, ratepayers are paying those development costs, end quote. Both bureaus' proposed budgets assume they will receive additional funding from the Portland Clean Energy Fund. Conservation advocates have campaigned against the use of PCEF funds for city bureaus. They note the intended purpose of the funds was for environmental initiatives and achieving carbon reduction goals. Despite these fiscal limitations, the BES and Water Bureau have a combined $47.5 billion worth of assets. That represents nearly 70% of the city's total inventory of capital, or the value of public infrastructure. City Council is set to vote on the cost increases March 13th. If approved, they will go into effect July 1st. Biden makes contradictory remarks on support for Israel. Wisconsin's top elected Republican faces a possible recall over election denial, and Virginia's governor vetoes a bill to rejoin a nonpartisan voter roll maintenance program. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
Stopping American humanitarian aid is in violation of the law. That should be clear. No more money to Netanyahu's war machine to kill Palestinian children.
Vermont Independent Senator Bernie Sanders says the U.S. can't be complicit in starvation. He's pressing the Biden administration to enforce the Foreign Assistance Act, which would halt $10 billion in military aid if Israel continues to block assistance from reaching Gaza. Israel denies it's blocking the aid, but humanitarian groups say it is. President Joe Biden says Israel's threatened invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza would be his red line with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. But Biden also says the U.S. is never going to abandon Israel.
The defense of Israel is still critical, so there's no red line. I'm going to cut off all weapons so they don't have the Iron Dome to protect them.
Negotiations over a U.S.-backed six-week ceasefire have stalled. The Gaza protest vote movement is spreading beyond Michigan, even as Biden is locking up the nomination. Edward Ahmed Mitchell with the Council on American-Islamic Relations says they're calling on voters in today's Georgia primary to leave that line in their ballots blank.
Democratic leaders should go to President Biden and say, look, you've got to stop this genocide. You've got to stop this madness, because there are voters in Georgia who, on principle, are not going to vote for you if this violence continues.
Former President Donald Trump is asking a Manhattan judge to delay his soon-to-start criminal trial until the Supreme Court resolves his blanket presidential immunity claim. On the campaign trail, Trump tells CNBC there is a tremendous amount of cutting possible in Medicare and Social Security, drawing a swift White House rebuke. In contrast, Biden is calling for higher taxes on corporations and the very wealthy. In Wisconsin, hard-right backers of an effort to remove Republican Assembly Speaker Robin Voss say they've collected the signatures to force his recall. They say they're frustrated he hasn't backed their claims that Biden stole the last election. But Voss, often a Republican partisan, describes them as an extreme minority.
I think that they are people who are misguided. You have not seen hardly anybody bring this topic up. It is a small, very loud, vocal group of people.
Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Supreme Court has declined a request by Governor Tony Evers to clarify if the state's new legislative district maps will apply this fall. Virginia's Republican Governor Glenn Youngkin has vetoed a move for the state to rejoin ERIC, a nonpartisan interstate voter registration exchange. Nine GOP-led states have left the system due to a right-wing vote fraud conspiracy theory. Democratic State Senator Aaron Rao says that's a serious mistake.
In a year where our democracy is on the line, but we also have the accountability and responsibility to be leaders for our nation.
I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
A former Boeing quality control manager who raised quality concerns was found dead this weekend in Charleston, South Carolina. John Barnett was a whistleblower who was in town to give testimony in a case against Boeing. Barnett worked for decades at Boeing plants in Everett, Washington, and in Charleston. He had repeatedly alleged that Boeing's manufacturing process had declined over time. He also said that managers were pressuring workers to cover up potential defects and problems. The coroner in Charleston said Barnett died, quote, from what appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound, end quote. This comes at a challenging time for Boeing, whose airplanes have had multiple malfunctions on commercial flights in recent months. In January, an emergency door fell off a plane and landed in a Portlander's backyard. A wheel detached from a plane during takeoff last week in San Francisco as well. An environmental nonprofit has put its money where its mouth is, launching a methane tracking satellite to track emissions from the global oil industry. Critics say the resulting methane leaks contribute to climate change and negatively affect people's health. Brown has more in Mexico. In New Mexico.
The first satellite launched by a nonprofit organization is now circling the globe, getting ready to deliver data on methane pollution from oil and gas facilities worldwide. The MethaneSat satellite, backed by the Environmental Defense Fund, will help track methane emissions, a major contributor to global warming. EDF's John Goldstein says the advocacy group is focused on making the data transparent, accessible to anyone, and actionable.
It's going to help the government, it's going to help industry, and it's going to help communities that want to know what's going on in that backyard. They'll have this publicly accessible online data source.
Goldstein says data collected should provide accountability from the more than 50 oil and gas companies that pledged at last year's Dubai COP28 climate summit to zero out methane and eliminate routine gas flaring. Last week, the Environmental Protection Agency published new methane regulations adopted in 2023. New Mexico adopted its own rules in 2021 to crack down on leaks, particularly from smaller facilities. The new satellite is designed to measure known sources of methane and also discover and quantify previously unknown sources. Goldstein says that would allow companies and countries to take action sooner to help reverse the Earth's rising surface temperature.
It is a very powerful greenhouse gas, more than 80 times more powerful pound for pound than carbon dioxide at driving climate change. And that makes it a huge opportunity for folks that want to address this problem quickly to get out there and get these leaks fixed.
New Mexico is second only to Texas as the largest oil-producing state in the U.S. MethaneSat was launched last week from California's Vandenberg Air Force Base. This is Roz Brown, New Mexico News Connection.
Three Washington ballot measures backed by conservatives could deal a blow to the state's budget. They got the go-ahead to appear on the November ballot at the end of the legislative session last week. Executive Director of Fuse Washington, Aaron Ostrom, says they also have a few more things in common.
They're all funded by the same Republican mega donor, Brian Haywood, and all sponsored by the MAGA Republican Party chair, Jim Walsh. The second thing about them is that all three are deliberately deceptive and misleading. And then the third thing about these three is they all seek to cut billions of dollars in funding for critical public priorities.
The initiatives would repeal the state's capital gains tax, Climate Commitment Act, and would make optional the Washington Cares program, which helps people save for long-term care. Haywood says he's backing these measures because no one in the state is challenging Democrats on taxes and other policies. Ostrom says the initiative that would repeal the capital gains tax for profits of more than $250,000 would leave a big hole in the state's budget, costing nearly $900 million a year. He says fewer than 4,000 people paid that tax last year.
Initiative 2109 would repeal the capital gains tax, which would take billions of dollars in funding from child care and schools to give a tax cut to Washington's wealthiest
Supporters of I-2109 say it's essentially an income tax, which is barred in the Washington state constitution. However, the state Supreme Court upheld the tax as constitutional in a ruling last year. Ostrom believes all three initiatives are a threat to the state.
These three initiatives would devastate funding for our kids in schools. They would dismantle our protections against air and water pollution, and they repeal efforts to care for our seniors.
That was Aaron Ostrom, executive director at Fuse Washington. New York Governor Kathy Hochul is instituting a five-point safety plan in the New York City subway. That includes adding National Guard troopers to subway stations. But advocates are concerned the result will over-militarize the subway system and intimidate people without guaranteeing greater safety for commuters. Edwin J. Vieira has more on the story.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul's five-point New York City subway safety plan is being met with backlash from some community advocates. The plan calls for deploying National Guard troops to keep commuters safe. It comes after Mayor Eric Adams deployed an additional 1,000 police officers into the subways. Crime has heavily fluctuated on the subway since the pandemic, but these moves come after a series of violent acts on several lines across boroughs. Salas Ciro with the Malcolm X grassroots movement calls the new plan atrocious.
It will increase racial profiling. It'll increase abuse. It'll increase the harassment of New Yorkers. And it won't make us safer. It creates a kind of terror in New Yorkers.
New York City police stats show a 15% drop in crime from last year. From January to February, 74 fewer crimes occurred on subways. Cyril doesn't deny crime is a problem in the subway, but feels there are more effective ways to create lasting results, including building more affordable housing and providing mental health services for those in need. As a native New Yorker, Cyril feels Hochul's plan is similar to former Mayor Rudy Giuliani's broken windows approach to crime reduction, the strategy of addressing smaller crimes to make a bigger impact. However, this theory has often been challenged on the basis that crime remains in flux. Cyril is concerned that the presence of armed guards and policy alters a place of community for residents.
People build community on the train. People feel connected to New York on the train. And the kinds of things that change that are people having mental health issues but being criminalized instead. People, you know, jump in the turnstile because they're poor and being criminalized.
Other elements of Hochul's plan include a new program bill permitting transit bans for people who've assaulted other passengers, adding new cameras to protect conductors' cabs, and increasing the subway co-response outreach or scout teams in the subway. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection.
You are listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for KABU News In Depth. At 6 o'clock, it's Eco Justice Radio. Then at 7, Rising Up with Sonali. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 40 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy as well with a high of 52. But looking ahead to later this week and this weekend, warm, sunny weather is on the way. Today in history, in 1968, Mauritius gains independence from the UK. It's an island country in the Indian Ocean off the southeastern coast of Africa. It is the only country in Africa where Hinduism is the most practiced religion. The quote of the day is from Irish writer Sir Richard Steele, born today in 1971. He said, quote, "A favor well bestowed is almost as great as an honor to him who confers it as to him who receives it." Native students from around the nation are gathering at the American Indigenous Business Conference, gaining skills and experience in the business field. With that story and more, it's Jill Freitas with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Jill Freitas, filling in for Antonia Gonzalez. Native students from colleges and universities from across the country are learning valuable leadership skills this week in Las Vegas. More than 250 students are gathered for the American Indigenous Business Leadership Conference. It's being held in collaboration with the National Center for American Indian Enterprise Development's Reservation Economic Summit, where more than 4,500 business leaders are gathered. The ABLE conference offers a variety of activities geared specifically to enhance educational experiences beyond what is taught through traditional academic methods. Prairie Blunt is the executive director for ABLE. She says with the program, they're helping future business leaders in three different ways.
We focus on training tomorrow's business leaders, and we do that in three specific ways. We provide scholarships, we provide paid internships, and mentoring opportunities.
Blunt says with scholarships and financial help, Native students, particularly in the business fields, can get their education and return back to their reservations and communities to build up the economy. Christian Rangel has been part of ABLE for 4 years and joined his junior year of college at the Northwest University of Oklahoma with a bachelor's in business management. He's now working to get his business major and says because of ABLE, he'll be able to help his community.
Whenever I graduate, I want to open a business and go back to my reservation in Pinon. In Pinon, there's not much water. There's not the best housing out there, so I want to create some type of housing.
Blunt says with the 30th anniversary coming up for the organization, they have a lot of plans in store, especially for the younger leaders still in school.
We're blowing up our programming to include high school track, a tribal college and university, and then a young professionals track. So those students that have come through our program but are just entering their jobs, they still need support as well. And so we're including them in our new programming going forward so that we can really create a more holistic experience for our up-and-coming business leaders.
The ABLE conference wraps up Tuesday with representatives from over 17 different states and over 35 different tribal colleges and universities. Sunday's 2024 Academy Awards was filled with many memorable moments. The movie Oppenheimer won a majority of the awards as predicted, but one thing Indian Country was rooting for didn't happen for Best Actress in a Leading Role. Native people across the country were holding high hopes that actress Lily Gladstone would take home an Oscar for her role as Molly Burkhart in Killers of the Flower Moon. Gladstone has been the top contender this award season, winning Best Actress at the Golden Globes and Screen Actors Guild Awards. So when Emma Stone's name was called, it appeared Stone herself was just as shocked. When going up to accept her award, Stone acknowledged Gladstone in her speech.
Lily, I share this with you. I'm in awe of you. And it has been such an honor to do all of this together. I hope we get to keep doing more together.
Gladstone is Blackfeet and Nez Perce. Her portrayal of Molly Burkhart in the film Killers of the Flower Moon has been widely recognized by critics and viewers alike. During the introduction of the Oscars Award for Best Actress, actress Jennifer Lawrence highlighted Gladstone's portrayal in Killers of the Flower Moon. People across Indian Country expressed their displeasure on social media, but many say Lily is still a winner and an inspiration. I'm Jill Freitas.
Kentucky legislators have introduced what the state's American Civil Liberties Union calls, quote, one of the worst anti-trans laws in the nation. The law would remove trans minors from their parents' custody and charge their parents with neglect if they used bathrooms aligning with their gender rather than their biological sex. The change to current legislature already banning trans students from school restrooms is contained in House Bill 747. The law went into effect when Republican legislators voted to override Governor Andy Beshear's veto. The new law faces similar circumstances if Republicans use their supermajority to override another veto. Can persistent allergies and high pollen counts contribute to worsening mental health? Researchers at Michigan's Wayne State University are studying a possible link. Farah Siddiqui has the story.
Michigan researchers are examining a possible link between high pollen counts or allergy days and worsening mental health and increased suicide risk. The idea is that allergies act as a stressor that disturbs sleep and causes irritability, contributing to poor judgment and, in some cases, mental health crisis. The study examines emergency department visits and suicides on high pollen days. Dr. Shushan Danagulian, who teaches economics at Wayne State University, says climate change is increasing allergy season length and intensity, which could be contributing to rising mental health issues.
When I have allergies, I tend to be more irritable, more sluggish, and tend not to make good judgments. So I wanted to find out if this affects behaviors more widely.
And it's worth a closer look. More than 47,000 people took their own lives, and over 300,000 were treated in emergency rooms for self-harm injuries in 2018 alone. Those numbers are part of a trend that has been increasing for a decade, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has awarded a two-year, $125,000 grant to Wayne State to study these seasonal allergy blues. Danagulian says other than the itchy, watery eyes and sneezing that allergy sufferers are well aware of, pollen is also known to cause reduced quality of sleep, daytime drowsiness, and reduced cognitive ability, all known factors in the risk of suicide.
We are not saying that high pollen makes us want to take our own life. Instead, it's the idea of having a persistent feeling of being unwell, and it accumulates over time until a particularly high pollen day can just tip you over the edge.
She adds more than 25% of American adults deal with seasonal allergies and says it's particularly important to seek treatment in rural areas where there are more trees. She adds a second contributing factor in Michigan is the shortage of mental health practitioners. If you or someone you know is in crisis, reach out to the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline at 988. For Michigan News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
President Biden said he told Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, quote, "You and I are going to have a come-to-Jesus meeting." One commentator says that would be long overdue and should mean Israel either facilitates humanitarian aid deliveries to Gaza or faces suspension of non-defensive U.S. military aid. The contradiction in U.S. aid policy between bombs and food must end. Now we go to Global Citizen commentary on the issue from Portland State Professor Emeritus Mel Gertov. The opinions expressed in the following piece are those of the speaker.
Hello, everyone. Following the State of the Union speech, President Biden had a conversation on the House floor with Senator Michael Bennet, Democrat of Colorado, who urged the president to keep pushing Netanyahu. "I told him, Bibi," said the president, using Netanyahu's nickname, "and don't repeat this, but you and I are going to have a come-to-Jesus meeting." His comment was caught on a microphone. Told that he had been overheard, Biden was unperturbed. "I'm on a hot mic here." "Good, that's good. A come-to-Jesus meeting with Netanyahu cannot come soon enough, because the president is in a policy bind. How to stay faithful to support of Israel's self-defense while also helping stop the humanitarian catastrophe taking place in Gaza with U.S.-made bombs dropping on civilian targets. It's a classic lose-lose scenario that is costing the president dearly in political support at home and abroad. So long as this contradiction in policy on the war, bombs, and bread continues, Biden's Middle East strategy cannot succeed. It will prevent implementation of a plan for new leadership in the Palestinians' West Bank leadership and for the ultimate goal of a Palestinian state side by side with Israel. Current policy will also enable Hamas to keep recruiting, Hezbollah to keep attacking from Lebanon, Iran to keep supporting the Houthis and other militias, Saudi Arabia and other Arab states to reject normalizing relations with Israel, and Russia and China to make gains in the Middle East. That's a very long laundry list of negative consequences, the sort that could eventuate in a regional war in which the U.S. would almost certainly have to become directly involved. It is being reported that the terrible incident that occurred recently in Gaza, in which over 100 people were killed and many more injured when an aid convoy was besieged by Palestinians desperate for relief, with many of them shot by Israeli soldiers, was a tipping point in Biden's approach to humanitarian aid. The incident spawned Biden's plans to airdrop aid packages and build an offshore facility to bring in more aid. I'll talk more about those plans in my Global Citizen International Digest broadcast Thursday. For now, what needs saying is that such plans, however well-intentioned, are a diversion from the policy challenge Biden must face head-on, demanding of Netanyahu that his government either dramatically improve the humanitarian situation in Gaza by removing obstacles to aid deliveries or face suspension of non-defensive military aid. That would be a come-to-Jesus moment for both parties. The message for Netanyahu would be that his resistance and stalling on U.S. concerns will no longer be tolerated. Aid has a price, even among allies, and especially military aid that not only is enabling Israel's war without end, but also enabling Bibi's continuation in office. Biden's consistent entreaties to Bibi must turn into serious pressure, of a kind that will get Netanyahu's attention. Netanyahu, like all his predecessors, thinks no U.S. president would wish to be seen abandoning Israel or treating it as anything but a valuable ally. He needs to be disabused of such thinking. Yes, Biden will have to pay a political price for using pressure tactics, not least giving Donald Trump ammunition to pose as Israel's real friend, with a pat on the back from Netanyahu. But Biden is a savvy politician who understands full well Netanyahu's game. In a word, be in no hurry to end the war. Biden needs to be in a hurry for the sake of his own and U.S. interests. He must be true to what he has been saying for some time and repeated in his State of the Union address. The humanitarian situation in Gaza is heartbreaking. To quote him, "This war has taken a greater toll on innocent civilians than all previous wars in Gaza combined. More than 30,000 Palestinians have been killed, most of whom are not Hamas. Thousands and thousands of innocents, women and children, girls and boys also orphaned, nearly 2 million more Palestinians under bombardment or displacement, homes destroyed, neighborhoods in rubble, cities in ruin, families without food, water, medicine. It's heartbreaking. It is indeed heartbreaking, but the U.S. needs to do much more than shed tears and implore an Israeli leadership that is untroubled by the horrific civilian casualties. The Biden administration needs to face up to the glaring contradictions in its own war policy, call for an indefinite ceasefire, the release of all hostages, and, as I'm arguing here, resolution of the contradiction by tying further non-defensive military aid to ending the humanitarian crisis. He has the power of law behind him. National Security Memorandum 20 and the Humanitarian Aid Corridor Act, both of which empower the president to sanction governments that use U.S. arms to abuse human rights. I'm Mel Gertow for The Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, March 12, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov, Reed Johnson, and Ezra. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Catherine Carley, Faraz Siddiqui, Edwin J. Vieira, Roz Brown, and Jill Freitas. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
Hey, this is Dr. Demento, and you are listening to the KBOO News, the only news you need.